or iTunes and look at last week's message, because you talked about what worship is. What is worship? And worship is essentially ascribing ultimate worth or value to someone or something. So we worship whatever or whoever we see as essential to life and happiness, which is why every human being is a worshiper. We all worship something. Everyone here can finish this sentence, and you may finish it in different ways, but you can finish this sentence. Life would be better if I had more of... You can fill in your own answer. What you answer is what you worship. My life would be better if I had more of... We know we're worshiping. We know what we're worshiping. We looked at last week. By what or who directs our behavior or commands our emotions. And that can be a very internal, that's an internal reality. That can be very hard to diagnose. You know, there's people who don't think they're worshiping anything at all. But everyone can finish that sentence. Or, just to kind of fast forward a little bit, we all can think that we're worshiping one thing, when in reality we're seeking something else. So that sometimes in a church context we can think, yes, I'm coming to worship God, or I worship God, but what we're really seeking is attention, approval, acceptance, love. We're seeking something else, and we're using God as a means to get what we really are worshiping, what we really are seeking. We can think we're following God, but in reality we desire something else. But the internal reality of worship and what we worship or who we worship does come out in various external ways. It comes out in our behavior, it comes out in our actions, our reactions, and yes, for the topic of this morning, what we worship can even come out in what we wear. And this isn't restricted to the world of the church. But we've had our history of this, but just I want to do a little quiz with you this morning. We can have a little fun this morning. I'm going to show some pictures, and I want you to tell me who or what the people in the picture are worshiping. Okay? You're just going to see what they wear. You don't hear them. You don't know anything about them. All you are going to have the opportunity to see is what they wear. But I'm going to guess you can pick out what they worship. Are you ready? Picture number one, please, Ron. Now, you may not be able to see the logo very clearly, but the guy in the corner here is wearing a Doug Gilmore sweater. Who or what are these people worshiping? Sports, Toronto Maple Leafs, whatever. Now, I think, well, sports teams, what do you mean people worship sports teams? Okay. How much money do people spend? Even more than that. The truly fanatic, you can tell the night before what happened to their team. If they're happy and joyful, their team won. If they're sad and despondent and even angry, their team lost. What we worship drives our behavior and commands our emotions. Let's look at the next picture. Now, these guys are painting the flag of their country on their bodies. Can anyone pick up the country, first of all? A little geography quiz. Sweden! There's another picture I chose not to use. It was a guy who was like, he just had basically, you know, shorts on, his entire full body painted, but he missed his armpits. It's kind of a funny picture to me, but I chose not that one. These guys, but national pride, right? We can worship, whether that's being Swedish or being Canadian or being whatever nationality we are, and that can show in our behaviors when we denigrate or put down people from other countries. That's a form of worship. We're describing our life is better because I'm a Canadian and your life is worse because you're a fill in your blank. That is a form of worship. We are saying our life is better because, you know, and I'm not saying patriotism is wrong. I'm saying national pride can lead us to a form of worship. Now, many religions around the world have dress codes. See if you can pick out which religion do these people follow. Sikhs, right? the turbans, it's part of the dress. We've had debates in our nation over should police officers who are Sikh be allowed or not allowed to wear their turban. They go, it's part of our religious culture. It's part of our rules of our religion. We are to wear this. How about what religion do these people follow? Buddhists, right? These are Buddhist monks. They follow the teachings of Buddha, and these are how Buddhist monks. If you see someone on the street dressed like this, you would be safe and right to assume they're a Buddhist monk, correct? How about this next picture? Who does this woman follow? What teachings? Islam, teachings of Muhammad. That, so if you see a woman who's dressed in the burqa, who's dressed in this, you would be right to assume. You just assume, wouldn't you? You wouldn't go and ask her, oh, sorry, what religion do you follow, right? You just assume, without even talking to her, she is a Muslim, she worships Allah, she follows the teachings of Muhammad. Now the question arises, looking at this, is there a Christian worship wear? Is there something that as Christians that we are to be wearing that would identify us as followers of Jesus to the world around us, that they wouldn't even have to talk to us? Now, is it this? Maybe, I don't know. How about this one? Not so many laughs, which I'm glad for, by the way. These are self-described followers of Jesus who go around. Some of you may know which group this is. I won't bother even naming them to give them even any more spotlight. A group, a church, who this is the least offensive messages I could find pictures of. I probably wouldn't go with either of these two. What about this next picture? Maybe it's this. Maybe it's just wearing a cross. Though, you know, we could have debates between different traditions. Should Jesus be on the cross or should it be an empty cross? Or we also live in a culture where this is a fashion statement much more than it is an identification of belief. In most of our churches in North America, what we actually have is more of this question when it comes to debate. The next slide. Is it the more formal or casual? Is that the proper wear attire for followers of Jesus? And it's more specifically related to a Sunday morning or a church service in general. Now, none of the last slides from the rainbow hair guy with the John 3:16 to now, none of the pictures that I've connected to have yet hit anything from what's stated here. It may surprise you, it may not, that there are statements in the Bible that do speak about a dress code for followers of Jesus. What worshipers of Jesus are to wear when we worship. Now, as I'm using the term when we worship, I want to remind you of last week. Worship is a lifestyle, not an event. Worship is not an adjective. Right? We use it as an adjective far too much. We have worship music and we have worship services, and that turns it into an adjective. Worship is a lifestyle. Worship is, as Pastor Sam said, and I won't get the exact words that he had, worship is involved in everything we do. And in everything we do, we are to be oriented to Christ, oriented to God. That in how we do things, what we do, it glorifies Him. That's worship. We're going to look at a number of passages this morning. And so just keep your fingers in Colossians chapter 3. All the other passages I'm going to use are going to be on the screen for us. But I need to make this statement before we get into the passages. If you look in your sermon notes, I've got these passages listed, but I make a note, especially regarding the first passage we're going to look at. All of the statements that are going to be on the screen come in a context where the issue is really not about dress code, but talking about something different. And the issues about dress are illustrative or an outcome of the greater principle that the writer is talking about. And so we're going to read passages, and there's going to be things that you're going to go, well, wait a second, what about that? What does that mean? I'm not going to have time this morning to get into it. So I want to encourage you, read, study the passage yourself. Look at the broader context. But the first passage we're going to look at, I specifically urge you to consider pulling out if you have a commentary at home or a study help, because 1 Corinthians 11, the first half of that chapter, is one of the more confusing and culturally laden passages that Paul wrote in that letter. And we'll see it very clearly even in the few verses that we'll read this morning. If you have questions about it or you wonder what it's saying, feel free, come and talk to me or send me an email. You can pull out one of my business cards from the welcome packet, though it'd be nice to let us know you've done that because I want to put another one back in. Just call or Pastor Barry, Pastor Sam, because again, context matters. And unfortunately this morning, in view of time, I'm just pulling out certain verses from a context to focus on the theme or topic for this morning. So here's the verses from 1 Corinthians 11. A man dishonors Christ if he covers his head while praying or prophesying. How many guys are you were praying this morning at some point during the service? Guys, you're praying? Hats, no. Well done, guys. You follow this. This is good. But a woman dishonors her husband if she prays or prophesies without a covering on her head, for this is the same as shaving her head. Yes, if she refuses to wear a head covering, she should cut off all her hair. And since it is shameful for a woman to have her hair cut or her head shaved, then she should wear a covering. A man should not wear anything on his head when worshiping. Ladies, getting a few laughs. Now, why are we laughing? At least some of you. I don't see many head coverings, ladies. See, we understand that there's some cultural things that are at work in this passage. First of all, the covering, if you think of covering, probably most of you think of would be like an old order Mennonite covering, like a little doily. That's what I always call it. I grew up in Waterloo County, okay? So I grew up in old order Mennonite country. We called it doilies. You know, something on their heads. That's not the kind of covering that was meant when Paul said this. It would have been more of a shawl or even a veil. Not in the sense of a burqa, but something just because in Paul's culture, especially in the culture of the city of Corinth, having a veil or having a shawl for a woman out in public affirmed her dignity in a culture that did not see women as, let alone equal, as women couldn't own property. Women wouldn't largely be educated. So it was a cultural way of affirming a woman as being something other than a sexual object. That may be very strange and foreign for us in our thinking, but in Paul's day, that's what a veil or a shawl did. And in the city of Corinth, if you know this passage, the city of Corinth was known by pagan historians as the most immoral, corrupt city in the Roman Empire. Temple of Aphrodite, 1,000 temple priestesses. That was the polite term. They functioned as prostitutes. Worship at the Temple of Aphrodite was you went and you spent time with a priestess, and that would manipulate Aphrodite to give you greater abundance or blessing in your farm or your endeavors or whatever it may be. Paul in the city of Corinth was telling the women who were experiencing a message where it said, Christ has set you free, that in Christ there is no, as we'll read later in Colossians, no Jew or Greek. And in Galatians, Paul said, no male and female. There's a freedom, a radical freedom that was just so different than everything else that some of the women were going, well, I don't need to wear this anymore to affirm my dignity because Jesus affirms my dignity. And Paul to that would say, yes. And here in the passage, he's also saying, you live in a culture, however, that if you go out in public without the shawl, without a veil, or with your hair cut short, everyone will assume you are a priestess at the Temple of Aphrodite. And when you affirm that you are a follower of Jesus and they see you looking as a priestess of Aphrodite, it's going to cause confusion and it's going to bring disrepute on the message of Jesus. So Paul, in this passage, there's other things going on, but in terms of dress code, there's a principle that Paul is communicating, saying how we dress needs to take into account the mores or the morals of our culture. So if you wear certain things and they have certain strong associations and they're not honoring to the gospel, Paul is saying to the city of Corinth, the women here, don't dress like that. And that's the principle. That's not male or female. It's for all followers of Jesus. That's the principle related to dress that's here in 1 Corinthians. Two more passages that are very similar to one another. Paul wrote this to Timothy. So whenever you assemble, I want men to pray with holy hands lifted up to God, free from anger or controversy. And I want women to be modest in their appearance. They should wear decent clothing and not draw attention to themselves by the way they fix their hair or by wearing gold or pearls or expensive clothes. For women who claim to be devoted to God should make themselves attractive by the good things they do. So we see modesty as, again, being modesty. So don't dress, should I say, too little. But Paul also says don't dress too up. Don't dress too nice. Don't make the focus on the external. Okay, really personal question. Don't want anyone to put up their hands. How many of you spend more time getting ready for Sunday morning than you do any other day of the week? I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm asking you to reflect on why that is. There may be, I'm not saying there is, there may be something in there that is more about you than it is about God. I'm just asking, and if you're wondering where I'm getting this from or why I'm saying it, I'm just taking it from the text. Peter, different author, writes this to a group of wives. And again, why is this all about women? It's not about being sexist. It's about in a culture where men had all the rights and privileges, and the only message, the only group that told women, you also have rights and privileges, and in God's kingdom, you are, there's no difference. I'm not saying there's no difference between men and women. He's saying in God's kingdom, how God views you, there's no difference between men and women. He loves men, loves women, accepts men, accepts women, both equally the same. It's all based on Jesus. That message, all of a sudden, women were living that out, and it was causing some specific issues. That's why there's all these restrictions regarding women. Not sexist, just based on the situation. Peter wrote this, don't be concerned about the outward beauty that depends on, here's again, fancy hairstyles, expensive jewelry, or beautiful clothes. You should be known for the beauty that comes from within, the unfailing beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is so precious to God. Notice the dress code. What to wear is not based on the external. He's talking about there's some internal things going on. That's to be where true beauty comes from in the context of this passage. Or what are the qualities that followers of Jesus are to clothe themselves with? And this gets expressly stated by Paul in Colossians. And this is a passage we're going to go to. So Colossians 3. I'm going to go through this again real quick. If you have your Bibles open to it, it's not going to be on the screen. Paul wrote, since you have been raised to new life with Christ, set your sights on the realities of heaven, where Christ sits at God's right hand in the place of honor and power. Let heaven fill your thoughts. Do not think only about things down here on earth. Now, what Paul's saying is, think about heaven, think about God's kingdom, how God does things, who God is, his character, his ways. Think about those things, not about things here on earth. That's not in the context of, we've had this expression, he was so heavenly minded that he was no earthly good. That's the wrong dynamic to understand this passage in. Paul's contrasting God's kingdom with the world, a kingdom that is in opposition to God, that doesn't operate as God desired or as God designs. So think about doing things God's way. Don't think about things of the earth that are in opposition to him. We'll see this as we keep going. For you died when Christ died, and your real life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your real life, is revealed to the whole world, you will share in all his glory. So, put to death. Definition of death is to separate. Separate from yourself the sinful earthly things lurking within you. Have nothing to do with sexual sin, impurity, lust, and shameful desires. Don't be greedy for the good things of this life, for that is idolatry. That's worshiping something greater than you're worshiping God. Verse 6, God's terrible anger will come upon those who do such things. You used to do them when your life was still part of this world, when you still lived in opposition to God. But now is the time to get rid of anger, rage, malicious behavior, slander, and dirty language. Don't lie to each other, for you have stripped off your old evil nature and its wicked deeds. In its place, You have clothed yourselves with a brand new nature that is continually being renewed as you learn more and more about Christ who created this new nature within you. In this new life, it doesn't matter if you're a Jew or a Gentile, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbaric, uncivilized, slave or free. Elsewhere, Paul would add male or female. We could add rich or poor. Christ is all that matters. And he lives in all of us. Now listen to this, verse 12. Since God chose you to be the holy people whom he loves, you must clothe yourselves with. Ready for your dress code? You must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy or compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You must make allowance for each other's faults and forgive the person who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. And the most important piece of clothing you must wear is love. Love is what binds us all together in perfect harmony. And he concludes with this in the section, let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. For as members of one body, you are all called to live in peace. Always be thankful. Let the words of Christ in all their richness live in your hearts and make you wise. Use his words to teach and counsel each other. Sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs to God with thankful hearts. And whatever you do or say, let it be as a representative of the Lord Jesus, all the while giving thanks through him to God the Father. What do worshipers wear? It's internal qualities. It's the qualities of Jesus Christ himself. That is what is to distinguish followers of Jesus above anything else. It's Jesus that we're to clothe ourselves with. In fact, this last passage, I'm just going to go through real quick. Romans 13, I believe it is. Next passage, right? Yeah, Romans 13. Listen to the last verse as we go through. Another reason for right living is that you know how late it is. Time is running out. Paul's saying, look, there's an eternity that is coming. Christ is coming. And Paul wrote this almost 2,000 years ago, and some critics go, well, Paul got that wrong. It wasn't Paul's point. Paul's point was we need to be living with an awareness that Jesus is coming one day. And if he came today, our friends and neighbors who don't know Christ are going to eternity apart from God. That reality is coming. The day is coming near. Wake up. For the coming of our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is almost gone. The day of salvation will soon be here. So don't live in darkness. Get rid of your evil deeds. I love this. Shed them like dirty clothes. Clothe yourselves with the armor of right living as those who live in the light. We should be decent and true in everything we do so that everyone can approve of our behavior. Don't participate in wild parties and getting drunk or in adultery or immoral living or in fighting and jealousy. Instead, here it is. Clothe yourself with the presence of the Lord Jesus Christ. This is to be our dress code. Don't let yourself think about ways to indulge your evil desires. The last two passages are kind of almost like two lists, two ways of living. One to shed as though it's dirty clothes. Last year, you know, about this time or about a month ago, Bridget and I did a course, Tough Mudder, where you're going through mud. And when you're done, I mean, it's just you're covered in mud. First thing you look for an opportunity to do is to get clean. Some of that stuff is just destroyed. You just shed it and you just get rid of it. These are instructions given to followers of Jesus. And so this morning, here's the question for us. When it comes to our worship wear, when it comes to those internal qualities, first question for us is this. What do you need to take off? I'm not talking about the external. I'm talking about those qualities we read in Colossians. Anger, lack of forgiveness, malicious, just trying to tear others down. Just a hardness of heart. There's all sorts of other lists. Are there negative qualities that do not honor God that come out in your external actions, that come out in how you respond to people? It shows in the external, but it comes from the heart. You know, almost 2 years ago now, I preached a series, Enemies of the Heart. Right? Anger, jealousy. There's a number of them. What do you need to take off, shed like dirty clothes, get rid of them? And the other side of it is, what is there that God is calling for you to put on? And again, I'm not talking about the external. Compassion, kindness, gentleness, love, forgiveness, not holding other people's faults against them. We heard that list in Colossians. What is God calling for you in greater measure to put on? And how, real quick, I just want to say this, how you go about doing this, putting things off and putting things on when it comes to those qualities, how you do that is very important, because we can make a very fatal mistake as followers of Jesus. We can think, well, you know, I need to try harder not to be angry. Or I need to try harder to forgive that person. I'm going to grit my teeth, and by my willpower, I'm just going to do it. And I'm going to glorify God because I'm going to do it. That is the way that Jesus actually died to free us from. That's the way of religion in all the negative sense. I do to earn God's acceptance. I do so I show God that I've changed. That's not what Jesus came to give us. Jesus came to give us a life where we don't try harder, we rely harder. Where we don't use our willpower, we surrender our will to His power. Those are very different. And for us, I say, especially in the West, we have a hard time doing it because we're achievement-oriented, we're performance-driven, we're success, you know, status-seeking. And it's all about, you know, our culture is, and we just feed into it as part of our culture. Look at me, look at what I've done, look at what I've accomplished. Why do people have midlife crises? Because I've gotten so far in my life, and I look back and what have I accomplished? If you try harder as a result of this message, you've missed what God has for you. Don't try harder. Rely harder. And so I'll frame it this way, if this is helpful. Don't make goals right now. Make time. Make time with God. Make time just to listen to what He says to put off and what He is saying, I already have for you to put on. And as you take off what dishonors me, you will find yourself worshiping me Sunday through Saturday, wherever you are, in greater ways because of the transformation you are allowing Him to make from the inside out. If you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, you've heard this morning kind of two sets of attitudes and actions, kind of two ways of living. And you probably could, as most of us, could probably identify with some aspects of both of those lists. The question I have for you is, which set of attitudes and actions, desires, values, outcomes do you want more of? Anger, bitterness, peace, love, gentleness, compassion. How do you want to be known? I'm going to guess it's the same as all of us here. You'd rather have that second list, the one with all those positive sounding qualities. And I just want to tell you this morning that God offers it to you up front. God offers you a life where He will transform you from the inside out. There is a cost, however. There is a cost to following Jesus. There's a cost to this, and the cost starts with this. You have to accept that you're a sinner. We don't like using that word in this culture. It's one of those words that's just kind of almost, you know, pejorative. But we have to recognize that you're a sinner. And all that means is you have done things that are wrong against others and against God. And you have to accept that you can't make up for it. You can't make it good. You can't make it right. It's there no matter how hard you try. You cannot undo all the wrong that you've done. And you know, if we take away the sin language from it, probably everyone would go, yeah, I can agree with that. I've done things that I know are wrong, and I can't make up for it. The issue, however, is not that it's only about you and your family or your friends or your coworkers. It's also about you and God. But God has said, I have come to give you my life, to take away that old life and to give you a new one where you can have love and acceptance up front. It's not based on your performance. You don't have to earn it. You can't buy it. You can't gain it. I'm giving it to you. But it's acknowledging that you're a sinner, acknowledging you can't change that, and that God can and has through Jesus. And with that comes a willingness to follow him. That's following Jesus is what worship is. That's the heart of worship. It's Jesus. So we're going to close with a song that we closed with last week. And so I'm going to invite the worship team to come forward, and they're going to lead in the song, Heart of Worship. And again, if you weren't here last Sunday, it's going to maybe be completely new. We're going to do this with everyone seated. The song is a prayer. And I'm going to make the same invitation as I made last week. If you want to sing, sing. If you don't know it and want to listen to the words, fine. If you need to come forward and kneel and just pray, do that, or come to the front and sit down. If you feel the need to leave right now because God is saying something to you and you know if I do anything else, I'm going to potentially lose that, don't feel bad. Leave. No one's going to judge you for that. Worship is responding to God and what he has done. And the heart of worship is Jesus.